tickety boo.
Good evening, one and all. Yes, a Wednesday, halfway through another week, almost the end of January. I tell you, it just goes quicker and quicker as you get older, the time, I tell you. But it's more or less the end of January. And here we are with another book and a chat. Well, one of the things that's been obviously for thousands and thousands of years is communication, passing stories, knowledge, whatever you want down by word of mouth. No matter what country, tribe, nation, continent, what have you, it's something that's always happened. And I remember growing up well with my grandparents telling us stories about things that had happened and stuff like that. And even now, you know, I talk to my sisters and they go, oh, do you remember such and such? Do you remember such and such? Because it's something that sort of becomes inbred in you because it's been passed by your family. It's like the way, and we talk about this a lot on the shows and everything, is when we get some novels, people to do with abuse or illness or all sorts of stuff like that. If it gets put into a novel, if it gets put into fiction, people who've been through that themselves or whatever with the subject is, they put themselves in the character, in the main character. They're relating to it. It's not a stranger. That person becomes them. And that, I believe, makes people, you know, take more notice and get into it more and stuff like that. Well, my guest today, he has written a historical fiction novel about addiction, recovery, love, forgiveness, etc. like that. And I want to find out a bit more about this because his background might lead us to how a lot of this stuff has been passed down, as well as his own aspects of what affected him. Anyway, I better introduce him, haven't I? Because on the show today, and I will tell you because I've never had another one with a name like this, but I have the one and only Grinnell Buzz Desjolais. Hi, Buzz. How are you?
Hi. How you doing, sir? I congratulate you. You hit the name pretty good. It's not too bad. Most people just really have a tough time with that.
Well, the last bit is very French to me, and obviously, you know, coming from England, it's pretty. We were taught French at school rather than sort of Spanish or German or anything like that. So, and obviously, we used to go to France a lot in those days and that. So, the first name, I don't know. I keep thinking of fairy stories when I see your first name, but I'm going to call you Buzz because I'll get it wrong next time if I say it bad. Buzz, you've written this book. It says historical fiction called Saving KC, which basically looks into, as I said, addiction, recovery, and love and forgiveness and stuff like that. But your own background goes back, isn't it? Your father or something like that was actually a movie star with Shirley Temple or something like that.
Yes, that was way back when. Randolph Scott was in that movie. It was like in the 30s or somewhere back there. He was called Susanna of the Mounties. And yes, it was with Shirley Temple. And my father was Little Chief in that movie. He was Martin Goodrider was his stage name.
Right.
And that was my father.
Uh-huh. And, You were raised in Chippewa Cree Reservation area. Is that the area?
I'm an enrolled Chippewa Cree in Montana. About 150 to 200 miles west of there is the Blackfeet Indian Reservation.
Okay, because yeah, I thought that
product,
was out there.
I'm a product of those two reservations. My mother is Chippewa Cree French, and my real father was was Blackfeet with a little bit of French mixture in that too as well.
Ah, so, okay. Well, it explains the name as well.
So that's kind of a little bit of history behind that.
Right. So, what I was saying about storytelling and handing down the stories and stuff like that, you were most likely raised with a lot of that, like myself. Yeah.
Yes. A lot, the tradition for natives is mostly oral. Nothing was written. Not much was written.
Right, it was.
So
And
that's.
there, but you've also been to a lot of places, weren't you? In the was it the army or something? You've been to a lot of places around the world as well, haven't you?
Oh yeah, from the reservation, we were a product of of assimilation, where we were moved out of Montana, and I wake up one fine fall morning, and we're in California.
Oh.
And my first question is, why didn't we live here first? It's a lot warmer.
Your story. Go ahead.
We wind up moving from there back up into Washington State, and then of course then I go from there. I was in the Army, and I came back, and we relocated at that time back to Spokane, Washington, which is on the border with Idaho. And then today I moved back into the Seattle area, and I work and live in the Seattle area at this time.
Because
So.
your book, Saving KC, it covers a lot of, well, is it post-Vietnam it's set in? So I can imagine a lot of people, soldiers coming back from Vietnam, the drugs that were out there available and that, there was a lot of addiction came back with it. And your book covers that sort of period of time and the addiction and recovery from it. Is that sort of what it's, what it incorporates a bit?
Yeah, we've kind of got two things going on. And the book at its core was actually written around, and with the intent in mind, was the historical part, written around Karen Carpenter.
Okay.
If
Who
you
comes? Co
recall who
co
she was.
Oh, she comes from just up the road from me here in Connecticut. Yep.
Yeah. Karen Carpenter, yeah, they originated back there, back east there,
Yep.
and moved out to California and created this thing. Well, she passed away at the young age of 32
Yep.
for anorexia,
Yep.
bulimia. So I was inspired to write this about her, so I staged it much like Quentin Tarantino's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. So we kind of follow her life a little bit, and then we do like Quentin Tarantino did. All of a sudden, you take a left and you go up into the sky, and you go a different direction.
Right.
And a lot of folks asked through the years, what would it have taken to save a Karen Carpenter? And between her and her friends, they always called her KC.
Right.
So,
Okay.
so.
That makes sense now. Right. I'm thinking Kansas City. It's all right.
No,
Okay, that
not at
makes
all.
sense.
And if you get a chance to look at the cover of the book, it has a California plate, a license plate, kind of falling into a set of gloved hands. And the license plate reads KAC1, California plate. And that's the last license plate that she had on her last car that she bought. So
Okay.
that's where that tie-in comes from. And consequently, so the other protagonist, the guy that is involved in the other end of this equation, is from the reservation, Blackfeet Reservation in Montana. I took a kid out of there and got him down to California, and he's living a life down there, going to school. And through a series of unfortunate events, he winds up getting drafted, because this is staged in the 70s, obviously,
Yeah.
early 70s. So he winds up in Vietnam. He gets captured and spends 3 years as a POW. And then he comes back. They find him, and he comes back, and his family's scattered all over the place. And he was betrothed. He was supposed to be married before all this stuff took place, but the war interrupted that. So he comes back. Everybody's gone. Turns out his betrothed has gone off and got married because she gave up and thought he was dead. So he really has no one. he winds up in a church through a series of circumstances, and he starts playing a piano back in the side room, and someone comes up behind him and starts singing, and it's our friend, our other friend, KC.
Right.
So that's kind of how they meet. Story goes from there. And I wrote this book and I put an ending to it. And then as I thought about it after it was published, I thought, oh, you know, I think I got the wrong ending.
Right.
So what I did is I wrote another ending. And the reason I didn't write the second ending is because I just ran out of guts. I didn't have the courage to write it. But ultimately, there's a copy of the book now that has both endings. You can choose.
Oh, really?
Which one you like best.
Oh, how great that is. You know, which ending do you want? Oh, great. That's wonderful. A lot of, you know, you've had your own issues with alcoholism and stuff like that. That must have left you at a pretty low ebb at the time, wasn't it?
I had my struggles. I'd actually been 40 years sober in a secret anonymous organization, you know, which we could guess what that is.
Right.
And I still do that. And I still very, very involved in that. So the tie-in between that as a practicing alcoholic and what people go through with anorexia is much the same. It's the same dynamic mentally, except you have to stop doing one and start doing the other. In other words, you have to stop drinking with the anorexia. They have to be able to get themselves in the right frame of mind to start eating.
Yeah.
Because obviously it will be fatal, ultimately. So with those two having their separate struggles, you know, the challenge is to bring them together. And so we managed to do that by the end of the story. And that takes place in Montana. And it involves a little bit of native mysticism and things like that. So again, it's my first attempt at writing. Some folks think it's pretty good. So
I've never good. Done. Well, the thing is, when you've got a great idea and a theme for a story like this, with the moral, with the help, because I know you go through that the main ingredient for recovery of these things is the support systems, and I know you set up your own one 12-step one in Washington prison, state prison, and stuff like that. What I said at the beginning is what I'm getting at here, because people who read this book read it because it's of the story, because of Karen Carpenter, because of whoever. As they're reading it, they are seeing your own first-hand experiences, the experiences perhaps that they've been through, be it, you know, alcoholism, be it substance abuse, etc. like that. And I think something like this, which has a great storyline as well, will really help a lot of people. And I think... that's why this book is so good.
So it's interesting that I heard you talking about early on about all authors and writers actually wind up putting ourselves in these books.
Yeah.
And I'm like no one different. Someone mentioned that, said, "Well, this is you," because I remember.
Hello.
Some pieces in there that's taken from an actual experience that I put myself through.
Right, right.
And there it was. And I thought, well, I guess they're right. But psychologically, we do hook ourselves into these things. And I think that's what makes them a lot more interesting, too.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember somebody coming up to me about one of mine and say, "Is there any of you in this book?" I said, "Of course there is. I wrote it. How could there not be?" I mean, how could you not?
And as much as we don't want to admit it or don't want to see it, it is there.
Yeah.
It is definitely there. So it's very interesting, and it's part of the process, I think, of doing this. Now, I love to write fiction. And someone suggests, well, why don't you write your own story? And, so it's not fiction. So it's real. I said, that's just not me. I don't like that. It's just my personality type. I don't like to. I've seen people do it, and it'd be, it's self-aggrandizing, and it's kind of, it's just not my style of doing things. So I would always write about myself from here on out if I do such things in kind of a fictional way, but with the real story
Yeah,
buried in there.
exactly. And it's not just the story. You have your own spiritualism, native spiritualism, what have you. That plays quite an important part, doesn't it?
Oh yeah. It's an interesting dynamic because a lot of us became alcoholic, drinking alcoholically, have experienced our spiritual, or let's say religious. We have many religious experiences, and as we discover later on, that's of no value when you're coming up against alcoholism. It has no value. It doesn't really help. So we're asked to, some people call it a higher power or whatever. It can be whatever you choose it to be. And as we grow in sobriety, that thing seems to, well, for me, it changes. In fact, it's still changing. It goes from Catholic and getting pounded around pretty good by the Catholic bunch and learning from that experience and then going to another experience. And another experience, at one point in time, I was going to every different church on different Sundays to look for this thing.
Trying to
It's kind
find
of
it.
an
Yeah, no,
experience.
I've had people on the show who've done that. They're looking for the answer. They're looking for the answer, and they go from place to place.
And so I had a sponsor who told me, well, if you really think about it, the guy, whatever this strength that we're mystic power is, he puts you right in the chair where you belong. So you don't really have to look anywhere. It's standing right behind you. And as things grow, I have the permission to look at other things. I look at reincarnation, I look at Buddhism, I look at all these other things that are very, and it's very freeing for me because I'm allowed to actually go places in my head and in my experiences with complete permission to go do so. And that includes the creator, and the look at that experience from the native perspective, which is very powerful and very real. And the book kind of exhibits that.
What about
So it's
go no go ahead you go ahead go ahead
just very it's just a part of the spiritual experience, and we call it a spiritual experience, not a religious experience, and that allows us the freedom to be in that place with no restrictions. We don't have to read a Bible or a Quran or any of those kinds of things in order to become and to have that experience.
Exactly. I mean, just whatever name they put in it, supreme being, no matter what faith it is, most places, most of them have got one supreme being. It's the same. It's just a different name. That it's the different name. The spiritual side of it doesn't matter what the religion's called and what part they sort of study and stuff like that. They're just like little rules somebody's made up. It what it is the actual spiritual well-being of how you are affected, how you see things and everything like that, which is open to everybody. It doesn't have to have a name on it.
So I always say it's kind of quantum, because when someone talks in terms of recovery, they'll say, well, I don't know how it works. I just know that it works. And quantum physics is the same way. We know it exists and we know it works. We just don't know how it works. But we'll accept that it does work. It's just like the judge who sentenced me the last time to do a little bit of time in the hoosegow. He's thinking, well, instead of sending you there, I'm going to send you sent to some of these AA meetings. And that was his solution. And the reason he does that is because he knows in special certain circumstances that it works. Other than that, he's completely powerless to do anything with me. But he's gonna send me to these meetings to get me off his docket and out of his hair. because he knows that for some people it does work, and unfortunately for me it did the last time
Well,
too. So
and the thing is, it's not just work for you. It's enabled you to now, not only through the work you've done and the help you've done, both within Native American people, within the jails, etc., like that, and now within this book, to pass that help on to other people who might not get any help from anybody, or they don't, they don't want to know. Whereas because you've been through it and how you've shared it, hopefully it's helping other people.
well, that I think that, and that's kind of how I think. When someone would tell me a story about their life that was a factual, real thing, I knew that because their emotions and their look on their faces were telling me that it was a real experience, and they would unfold the story. And sometimes didn't have very, very good endings, but it was a story that I became very interested in, and because there was it put it in context, and it wrapped it in that person's own fact of his life, and so I could really relate to that as I was going through my recovery process. So putting this together like this, the way I did, to involve her trauma and her problems, along with his trauma and problems, and putting those two things together, and for both of them to discover that these things were going on with one another, and that there is a common spiritual link between both of those maladies, and both of them involve a spiritual experience has to be had, because with like alcoholism, there is no cure. We put it in remission. And then we keep it that way by doing certain things where that involves working spiritually. And anorexia is much the same way, in that at some point, the psychiatrists and the doctors can only do so much with it. The rest of it has to do with some sort of a spiritual awakening that takes place that spurs that person on to, embrace that spiritual experience and keep growing that. And that's, again, they say there is no recovery, there is no cure for anorexia. It's something that the person is going to have to carry all their lives and deal with it. And so again, to put it in remission by a spiritual experience and living life a certain way.
Did you find writing the book therapeutic to yourself?
Well, it was traumatic.
Right.
It really was that a kind of a longer part of the story here is that I hadn't thought about Karen Carpenter for years, and her and I would have been the same age if she were she still alive. So she was like my first senior female crush. But back then it wasn't cool to buy a Carpenter's album. If you bought one, because I was in the U.S. Army at the time I got drafted, so you had to smuggle it wherever you went and hide it. So anyway, it just wasn't cool at the time. But anyway, I hadn't thought about her in years, and I ran across this thing on YouTube, and so I listened to one of the songs. There was an old video with her singing, and it was so beautiful. And I thought, God, I don't remember her having that such a gorgeous voice.
Oh, yeah.
And as it went through this, and her story unfolded. And the reason I didn't catch a lot of the story is I was kind of tied up. I mean, I was out raising Cain, and these things about her death just kind of slipped past my radar. And as I studied her death and her experiences in life and the people around her, that spurred me to write this thing, because I was just kind of overcome by the experiences that that one person had had. And like the whole world was stacked against her. So I thought I had to put that out somehow. What does it take to save her? How do we fix this? So that's kind of where this thing developed. And as I was writing through this thing, and again, sometimes we fall in love with our characters, and so I think that's what happened to me in this case. And it's tough to admit that sometimes, because you get to thinking, well, God, aren't you a little loony for thinking that way?
Well, I don't
And I
know.
actually went to my psychiatrist.
We have that all the
Actually,
time on the show, because we say that we don't. No matter how much you plot a book, the characters lead you. They take you
Yeah.
down different paths to what you plan. Some even want larger roles. Some demand their own book. And people say that,
Yeah.
writers will tell you that's true. But people who hear the writers say that think they're thinking lunatic. What are you on about? But it's
Well,
true.
that is what you just said is very true, and I had that experience with this book. I would start writing, and the character reads the thing. Next thing he winds up someplace, and then I'm standing there thinking, okay, and I'm asking him, what are we doing
He'd
here?
say, "Well, yeah, how do I get out of this?"
I said, now this is not going to work. So you wind it back up, and then you start again.
It's
But it's
true.
happened. It happened more than once that I discovered that. It's quite the phenomenon.
Yeah,
It's
it
interesting.
certainly is. Well, it's been great chatting to you, Buzz. Time's going, so what I'm going to do now is actually hand the show over to you, so you can tell everybody where they can find about more about you, and of course about your wonderful historical fiction novel, Saving KC. So over to you, Buzz.
Okay, thank you, Barry. Yeah, you can find this book. It is on Amazon. And if you just plug in Saving KC, and my name is Grinnell Dujarry, it should have me there in the listing. But it's Saving KC, initial K, initial C. You can find it on Amazon. Now, it is available in hardcover. It's the original writing manuscript with the original ending. And then there's an alternate ending that has both endings in the same book. It is also available on audio, on audiobook. You can get it there. Or go to the website. You can actually read a little bit about my history and about this book and a little bit more information on me. That is Saving KC, thestory.com. And you'll find good things there too.
Okay, well, Buzz, thank you
Oh.
so much for being a guest on the show today. Really enjoyed it, and I'm sure your book's going to help a lot of people. Thank you.
Sir, thank you for having me on.
Pleasure. Well, there you go. My guest today, Grinnell Buzz Desjarlais. Now, Grinnell, Grinnell. Buzz in quotes, i.e., that's what he's known as, and then Desjarlais, Desjarlais, Desjarlais. And we've been talking about his wonderful, and I'm sure it helped to a lot of people, Saving KC. KC, Karen Carpenter, and we talked about her voice. People listen to me on my music shows know I reckon there's the top three women with the most pure voices are Karen Carpenter, Judith Durham from The Seekers, and Mary Hopkins. It's Karen Carpenter. We know all about her. Anyway, great book, a lot of help to a lot of people. Well, that's it for this week on our chat shows. I'll be back on Sunday, first off from 5 to 6 with Those Were the Days, music from the 20th century with a theme. And what's the theme this week? I can't tell you. Yes, I can. It's sleep. Yes, the theme is sleep. So think of songs and bits of music with sleep in the title or to do with the artists or stuff like that. And then of course from 6 to 7 we have the swinging 60s, music from the 60s from not just the British invasion but from all over the world. And then next Tuesday and Wednesday I'll be back with two more chat guests. So that's it. Until then we have